look out. Here comes Monsignor.
Welcome to the JDV Productions Podcast.
Trouble here on the front stretch. One car hard to the outside wall.
Interviews with the biggest stars.
Man, I can't give it up enough to this team, but especially Tommy Baldwin, man. I've had a lot of fun with him over the years, and it's just getting better.
Go behind the scenes. In-depth storytelling. Catch up on all things JDV.
Together, JVD Productions and Josh Mineta.
The JDV Productions Podcast.
Your champion.
Starts now.
Welcome back to another episode of the JDV Productions Podcast. My name is Josh Mineta, founder and president of JDV Productions and your host. Today, I'm joined by my good friend and the race director for JDV Productions, Mr. Brian Callen. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
You bet. So Brian and I have known each other for, I think, pushing on two decades. His late father was a dear friend of mine, and that's kind of how we got connected. And Brian's been on the JDV Productions team since before JDV Productions actually ever began. But Brian, tell everybody a little bit about your history. And I think this is year number 25 for you, right?
Yeah, just wrapped up the 25th year of being on the flag stand at multiple different racetracks all over the Northeast, from Stafford to Thompson. I started out at Lee in 98. So it's been a journey. A lot of fun, a lot of late nights, many hours. Traveling up and down the road, but it's been a blast.
Yeah, it has. And it's something you did with your dad for much of your career until he, unfortunately, he passed a few years ago. But you've had the unique opportunity, Brian. I mean, you've worked for ACT. You've done some MRS races when I was with them. You've done the super modifieds, and you kind of, you know, growing up at Lee, like that's kind of the super modified corridor of the Northeast, as it were, until you get a little further west into like Oswego. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, being on the flag stand for the Supers, I think that's a difficult experience to explain unless you've actually had it.
Yeah, it's one of the, I would have to say it's the most intense thing I've ever endured. There, being at Thompson on the stands with a full field of 24 cars started the largest race that I did there. And they'll be up around 150 miles an hour at the end of the front stretch. And when if they're double file coming at you, it's like getting punched, to the point where, Sean Houlihan actually caught me from being blown off the flag stand one race, actually put his hand behind me and caught me. So it's intense. You'll see different areas where the wing struts will break or whatever, and the wings are at different angles coming at you. Different things have flown off cars and come very, very close. So I've gotten hit a couple times by wrenches and different things. So it's intense being up there.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I remember one time, I mean, the Supers are something else. I mean, you can almost just put your hand out there and like touch them, which is a little disconcerting when you're on the flag stand, because normally the cars are so much lower. They're way well below you, but being able to kind of like reach out and put your hand there, that's a little crazy. And then when the wing struts break and those wings are kind of like all over the place, you're just like, wow, this seems like dangerous.
Yeah. It definitely makes you see everything in a different perspective, when those sort of things happen. I was up at Thunder Road years ago, doing an ACT race and almost got hit by a late model up there.
That was the 24 car, wasn't it? I've seen pictures of that.
24 Jeff LeBrec, actually one of the, out of Rochester, New Hampshire. Good family friends, just happened to be on the flag stand when he climbed the Widowmaker up there, and it was a close call.
Yeah, it's a wild configuration. So I mean, for those who may not know, Thunder Road has a coming off of turn four. It's called the Widowmaker, and usually, if you impact it somehow, you end up on the driver's side, and the roof is exposed to the infield. And in that particular photo, I mean, that like you can see the hole underneath of the car basically coming right by you.
Yeah, I was actually kind of back with I was throwing the white flag at the time, I believe, on a heat race. I believe it was a Labor Day Classic, and Yeah, that made for a very long, sort of emotional day getting through it. So,
I'm curious, what's been your favorite memory? Like, what are some of the top ones that just jump out to you when you think about it over the course of your 25 years?
Obviously the last couple of years being down at Stafford doing the SRX stuff, that they had there, being lucky enough to have that opportunity, was pretty amazing. Getting a text message in the middle of the race from my uncle, are you on TV right now? That's a pretty cool thing. Feel really lucky about that. I've had the chance of being up on the flag stand at Loudon for an ACT race years back, but really working under some of the different throughout the different organizations, people that you see in different halls of fame, like the working with SRX and the folks that run that, Tony Stewart and everything, is pretty amazing to hand these guys checkered flags at the end of the show. Ryan Newman, a Daytona 500 champion, mm-hmm. Denny Hamlin the same way. So that's something that I'll be able to look back on years and years from now and really, really appreciate. Now seeing my son get into it at the same time, the fact that he's sharing with me, I think that's one of my most special things to take away at this point. Mm-hmm. And I wish Dad could have seen that. So
yeah, he'd be beaming for sure. No question about it. So Brian has progressed in his career and he does some race directing. He's race director now at Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park. He also is the race director, as I mentioned earlier, for JDB Productions. Brian, I think the race director is the most hated and least understood job in stock car racing. So what as a race director do you do?
I will be the first person out of the tower to be ready to have any conversation at any time. I will obviously I have to make snap judgment calls to the best of my ability and really rely on my teammates because that's really how I feel is everybody works as a team. We're all doing this together. We're obviously not going to get rich doing this. We're here for fun. So you're leaning on some of your counterparts to help you out as well. But at the end of the day, I have broad enough shoulders to really take that on. Hey, at the end of the day, it was my call. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk it out with you guys and probably not going to see eye to eye if you were on the bad side of things, but I'll give you my view. I'll be the first to admit if I can go back and look at a video and say, hey, I was wrong. I've had a few of those conversations over the years as well. Hey, I was wrong. I made the wrong call and I have to live with that. But at the same time, nobody's perfect. And once those people walk away and they realize, yeah, he owned it. And they respect you at the same time for owning your mistake. And at the same time, I actually had, one of the biggest things that Scott Tapley actually taught me a couple years ago is, hey, if you're questioning a call that you made, you were probably wrong.
Mm.
And it was something that I took away and have been able to really, really grow with that at the same time. So, mm-hmm. That's a piece of advice that I appreciated and still do to this day. So.
Yeah, and I mean you're making those snap decisions on the track. I mean, obviously your primary job is to enforce the race procedures as they're written, and you advise on those in the off season when we're drafting rules and you know things like, for example, you know, would there be a cone rule or not a cone rule? You know, those are the types of things Brian will advise on, and then whatever we all decide on as a team, then it's Brian's responsibility to enforce that. And then when he talks about collecting feedback, one of the things that makes I think the JDV system unique is we invest in making sure that we have people who understand racing, angles of racing, et cetera, looking at the competition on the track to be able to advise somebody like Brian in his role as race director to as to what happened out there, because angles are everything and where you're standing can make the same incident look completely different. So making sure we have people in the right spots, that was something that we did really, really well at Thompson. There was somebody positioned in the infield at the end of the back straightaway, in the entry to turn three. And then there was somebody on the entrance to turn one who could give good feedback. So we could make really good decisions as far as that goes. But Brian, I mean, you know, you have to make decisions like, I don't think people understand like snap decisions. I once heard a penalty was given one time, and the person was, their penalty was they had to go to the tower and stand with the race director for a few races. And then when like something happened, the race director would say, okay, what do we do? And they're like, what do you mean? What do we do? It's like, you need to decide it. We need to get the race restarted. It's literally that fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's kind of funny to see somebody step out of their comfort zone and to be put in that position. And they're like, their eyes get all big and their mouth drops. And then you're like, all right, now you understand. And at the same time, I've actually had a late model competitor be like, hey, I want to learn. I want to learn that side of the house, which is really cool that they would really want to take the time to say, all right, I need to understand where you guys are coming from on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. That's the view that I've always had. And at the same time, like I had this, I had a racetrack owner that had, I didn't see eye to eye with, and on a certain situation. And, it was kind of a funny conversation at the end of the day where we agreed, just because we're in the tower and we're not driving race cars, we're racers just the same as they are. We are passionate about the sport and wanting to see it grow and succeed. And at the same time, I want to see every single driver succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I want the best for every single one of the drivers at the end of the day. I'm not going to cheer people on, but I'm not going to boo them either. I'm there to be their backbone and make sure that they're going home to their families at the end of the night safely. So that's my racer aspect. So
exactly. And I think that, you know, the point you make about safety, that's another thing I think that makes us different is we invest in that. You know, you oversee that team and coordinate with Andy Byron, who's very well known. He's a field investigator for the NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour, more affectionately known as Sippy. But, you know, you coordinate with Sippy to make sure that we have, you know, the best of the best in response, and making sure that we're up to date and understand how the race cars work. So, you know, we're practicing for the worst possible outcome. We're hoping for the very, very best, but we're practicing for the worst. And, you know, you've been on my team long enough to know we've experienced some really difficult moments, but our preparedness mattered. And, you know, it helps a lot. Talk a little bit about, you know, the work Jordan and Sippy does and just how the peace of mind it gives somebody like you in your role.
Yeah. So, Jordan Harnish is my tower guy, my dispatcher. So when it comes to, safety concerns, issues on the track, he has his spotters throughout, either the infield or different places, throughout turns. And they always have their eyes out. Hey, 24 cars dropping fluid, whatever it may be. And we have people confirming that throughout the track. Sippy might actually, say, hey, look, the track is peeling up here. We have safety concerns. So we've had to stop races at different points in different tracks, due to that sort of thing. So having guys that have years of experience, Sippy through NASCAR, Jordan has many years of experience on the flag stand in the tower, up in multiple tracks up in Upper Maine. He's kind of a diehard, much like us, driving 5 hours to get to a track because he lives in the middle of nowhere in Maine. So it's nice to be able to have somebody that you have full trust in, that has the same philosophies as us on any given Saturday or Sunday when we're at the track.
Yeah. And what I love about those guys is they understand that no one's paying to watch them. Yeah. So like they're there, they know that if they're out there, things aren't going well and they need to be as efficient as possible and take as good a care as possible, because they understand that we're running the racetrack for the race fans.
Yep.
And that's what matters. And I think I asked Sippy like a couple of weeks ago, and he estimates we'll have 12 or more cup guys who are working cup events throughout the country that will be at Monadnock this year, responding to on-track incidents and supporting the race teams, which, you know, I think should give everybody a lot of confidence that those are the type of people who have your backs. You know, if something happens to you on the racetrack, we've got the very best responding to take care. And it's just something that's really important to me that was born out of a situation I had experienced where we had to fly a driver out, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, if that ever had to happen again, we were really buttoned up and we learned from that. Thankfully that driver was okay. But yeah, it was a difficult situation. So
yeah, there's not a single driver's meeting that I haven't been involved with since that time. Because you never know really how you're going to react in that situation until it happens. And I happen to be working the flag stand that not for that particular race, but I was on the flag stand at Thompson at that time. And it was really one of those things where you take that away and you have to kind of compartmentalize that to take it with you over the years since. And every single driver's meeting that I've had since then is I stress to everybody, like, hey, this is where we're at. I want you to respect those around you and roll your car back on your hauler, back into your trailer, the same way that you rolled it off. Safely. That's what I continue to repeat: respect and safety. Mm-hmm. to every single one of the competitors that I see daily. So
that's it. I mean, safety is the number one priority. Right. So, you know, Brian, we bring a unique, I think, a unique way of wanting to police the races. And, you know, for some, that means that it's rigid and firm. Talk a little bit about just the way we do that, why we believe what we believe, and how we execute it.
Yeah, I will be I was sort of raised around the rigidity of different race directors and that sort of thing. So that was one of the things that I took away and kind of roll with an iron fist for some of them. But I think you, by only doing it one way, people see consistency.
Right.
And if you're not consistent, it allows people to push the boundary of what you're personally truly comfortable with. So that's one of the things that I always want to stress. You might not like my call, but I'm going to make the same call today that I'd make tomorrow that I made last week. So it's consistent across the board.
And I think that matters. Like if you ask, a lot of racers, that's what they want. Like if you're going to make a consistent call, even if it's a bad call, at least if I know if it's going to be done the same way, I can accept that. And I think, you know, from our perspective, you know, in basically in this order, like it's safety first, and then we want to make sure there's consistent enforcement of the rules. And we can, as you said, you know, we're very happy to talk and we're very approachable. We might at the end of the conversation, we may not change a thing.
Right.
Or you may provide some insight for us that in the future we can go, okay, that was a different perspective that we hadn't considered, and that's helpful. But yeah, that has led to a lot of success throughout my career. You know, thinking back particularly to when Scott and I were working together at Thompson, there was one way. This is how we do things, and this is how we're going to execute. And that over time, people came to really appreciate the fact that we would just deliver that consistently. And that's exactly what we're bringing, I think, to Monadnock. And we're blending that too with, and this is what I like about what we bring, I think, is a common sense approach. Like when I told the teams, we're going to look at the rule book, and if there's rules in there that don't make sense, we're going to eliminate them. And we've basically done that.
Yep.
You know, will there be some more we have to eliminate? Yeah, but we need to see how they work out with us being there for a year and things like that. But that, I think that consistency piece that you bring up is, I mean, it's critical to being able to, if I'm a race team, like that's all I want. I just want to know I have a fair shot.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, you having been around it for so many years and you've got good relationships with racers in all different disciplines of racing. I mean, you know, people in the wing, the fendered stuff, the open wheel modifieds, like top to bottom. I think that's a great asset. So when you found out we were doing Monadnock, what were you most excited about?
Obviously the location helps a lot.
The short commute helps.
Yeah. A lot shorter commute than I've had, in years past. That is sort of key as my kids and stuff grow. I've missed out on a lot of stuff. So that definitely, I love the bull rings. I love the small track. I've obviously been involved with the bigger tracks for quite a few years now. The little bull rings, feeling that, that atmosphere I think every track has that gotcha.
What do you think Monadnock is?
I honestly, as soon as you walk through the gate, you have the backdrop of the trees and the tight quarters, and you really feel that just with the people that are there. There's definitely a tight-knit community over there that I'm really looking forward to getting to know, and helping them bring it to the next level, because it's going to take everybody doing it together.
That's right.
The fan base is there and really attracting the next generation of fan to come in. I think there's a lot of years missing in the fan base and it doesn't matter what track you're at.
Yeah.
We've missed essentially a good portion of a generation. So some attendance is down in places and it'll take all of us working together to bring that back. So
it will. And I think, you know, you are seeing a little bit of a youth movement, which is great to see. Like our Mad Pup registrations are really good, but I do think we're missing some in the middle. But I think you hit on it. You know, it's interesting, like, you know, even Monadnock, like physically the grandstands kind of surrounding the place, except for the wood line and the backstretch, like it's intimate. That's the word I would use for it. It's like very intimate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think you're right. You know, getting to know the community that's up there, like they don't know us. We know some of them from our travels around and the work we've done, or maybe they raced with us in Connecticut or something, but getting to know people, it is they're really passionate about it. And reading the surveys, I mean, it's really remarkable to see just the loyalty and the dedication to the facility. And so, you know, I think the local roots that are there and the national quality that we deliver together are going to be a beautiful combination come 2024 over there.
Absolutely.
So, all right, Brian, well, thanks so much for joining us for the podcast. It's, the only time you really get to talk to the teams, I think, is during the driver's meeting or when they want to have a one-on-one meeting with you or something like right. that. So it's nice to be able to let them hear a little bit about you in a kind of a non-competitive setting. So thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me. And I appreciate the time and I look forward to 2024 and beyond.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the JDV Productions podcast. We'll be back again next week with another guest. In the meantime, for more information about JDV Productions, you can visit jdvproductions.com or any of our social media channels. For more information on what's happening at Monadnock, you can visit monadnockspeedway.com or check us out on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks again for listening.